Hello, grandkids, and welcome to OPA number 72. This is Kevin DeFrango. Right beside me is Ken Phillips. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. It's been a quick week this week, it feels like. I don't know if I say that every week or not, but...
Yeah, my weeks are flying by. Extra work and having to... instruct two different interns makes for a hectic day that anytime you're busy, in my opinion, things tend to move faster, even though they don't really.
Well, you know, there's no real, I mean, how can we prove that? Here's what I think.
Well, time doesn't speed up, though.
Well, how would you know, though? Like, if time itself... All right, let's hear this.
Are you the timekeeper?
Time... if time were to speed up, that would mean that, all the clocks would speed up too. Like, we would not know. Like, there would be no way for us to know.
Oh, you're saying that they could secretly move up without anybody noticing that it was moving up?
Well, if time itself were to move faster somehow... And it just, like, somehow in our experience, time is moving faster.
Oh, you're not saying time. I'm thinking clock instead of time.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, our clocks would not necessarily detect this change in time.
If time itself were to move faster, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
So the clock would be as unaware as us.
It would be going fast for the clock as well, I guess, you could say.
Right.
Yeah. So... There's no way to know is what I'm saying, Kevin. Time could be actually moving faster, and we would be
none the wiser. Yeah. Yes. So, yeah, I guess if it is happening, we are none the wiser.
Exactly.
So, I don't know. I think that it does not make time move faster.
Okay.
But, indeed, it is just more fool, so it feels like it's going quicker.
Well, we don't have to see eye to eye on everything, I guess. That's why we have a show.
Yeah, and that's also why some men put their ladies in coach while they fly business class, Ken.
Yeah, this was an interesting article on a couple levels. And
I got a kick out of this because... I feel like on our trip either to or from Jacksonville there, that we saw this happen. That Melissa and I...
Maybe we should back up for a minute and explain.
And that's what I guess I could go into that right now.
Yeah.
There was a gentleman who was seated in business class on the plane. His entire family... which was wife and two or three kids, were in coach with us, like about two rows away from us.
Okay. Now, this is the kind of activity that the article is describing. Husbands who ride in business or first class, and wives slash families riding in the... steerage, or what are they?
And that was one thing that certainly entertained me about this article is that it was, I think it's from The Guardian, isn't it?
And apparently, this is a trend, and they didn't specify like how often this happens, but they did interview several couples.
It was like at least three wives about this situation. And honestly, it was quite funny. Some of the wording... Oh, it's from the Telegraph.
Right.
So it's an English paper. And the fact that they mentioned... the one wife was like, I was tired of his whinging.
Yeah.
I was like, man, that is a word that I need to use more often. I love that word. And the fact... Just the fact that that guy's that much of an asshole just makes me want to hit him.
Yeah, there were some good quotes in this one. Just trying to... the one wife says something. John finds economy unbearable. I imagine.
That's an excellent English accent, Ken.
He doesn't like the chatter, hates that too many people are in close proximity, and can't stand being crammed into his seat. Oh, yeah. When they both flew in economy to the Maldives in 2001, it was a disaster. John didn't stop moaning and grumbling. I had to have a few glasses of wine to drown out his whinging. Yeah, that's the one.
That is... well, and that's just kind of funny. It was just like, my husband is such an asshole that I would rather him be up there by himself than to deal with him.
Yes.
Like, that's one where I'm just like... in that situation, I'm like, really? Like, you can't just suck it up for a little bit and, as the saying goes, take it like a man.
You know, I would say that these people being profiled here, it seems like they are maybe big ego-driven people.
There was
kind of a comment, like, these were sort of people who saw themselves as... captains of industry types, people who are kind of...
which was the other thing that was kind of funny is that they, the guys, at least mentioned specifically in this article, like, act like they're making a bunch of money, but then they're all of them are like, well, we can't afford to have our wife in business class with us, too. Like, how do you have the ego, but then admit to yourself... that you don't actually make that much money?
No, I don't understand it. Like,
that's one of those brain explosion moments. It's just like, how did you start making money? Like,
if these guys are, I mean, presumably millionaires, that they are, you know, their companies are paying for them to fly first class, and then they can't somehow afford for their,
because, and it sounded like most of them were paying out of pocket for the wives because the business wouldn't cover it, but it's still just like, if you're getting flown around like this, aren't you making good money?
Yeah.
It's just like, dude, no, seriously, you're just, like, there was nothing in this article that didn't make me think of these guys as assholes.
Yeah.
The same thing, I mean, the same thought ran through my head when I saw the situation in person. I am like, that guy is an asshole.
Right. And that was just like some like horrible stuff in here about like...
mistreating the flight staff.
Or like
their wives.
The wives wanting to be able to visit them up in first class, but then like getting kind of... stiff-armed by the flight staff and denied.
Yeah, I can't say I was completely surprised by that just because I feel like that's happened before. Just or I've heard of it happening before to pretty much anyone that tries to get into first class. Like, if you're trying to be sneaky about it and just, you know, get up there because you see a free seat or something.
Yeah, I wonder if, I'm just wondering, like, how often this actually does happen. I wonder if there's, anybody else out there who has, experienced this in first person or, seen it happen on a flight that they've been on. But, I don't know. It just seems, really kind of disrespectful, I guess. You know? And some of this, I mean, I'm trying to think of, I'm trying to think of like any other nice way to go about it, but, no. I wish we could get a woman's perspective on this, but,
but there's just no way to do this.
Wait, we have
a woman?
A rare guest. There's a woman here.
Yeah.
Yes, there is a habit of some men who are flying business class while their wives sit in coach.
They're on a trip together.
Yeah. Is he the employee and she's tagging along?
Well, no, he is like a, say, business owner, and they're going on a trip, maybe for, I don't know, it seemed like a lot of these were like business slash pleasure trips, so correct. I don't know. There might be several things messed up about this whole situation.
Well, yeah, both types of travel were mentioned, but the guys did generally seem to travel a lot because of business, so there were
business in quotes.
No, it sounded like business.
Like, okay. Yeah, making what, deals.
Like, but it also like travel.
Probably different kinds.
Property, hotel,
real estate, maybe. Real yeah. Estate. But
so wait, they okay? So they
so they're traveling in first class.
So where's the kids?
In the back.
With the wives?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, F that shit. Oh, no, no, no. There better be a nanny with me.
Well, I don't know. That would probably be too expensive,
too.
Oh, my
God, no. Like. If that's the case, then yeah, let his ass sit up front and give me a nanny.
Well, I don't know if that would make sense. I mean, then he'd have to pay for a ticket for the nanny.
So,
but it still might be cheaper.
Then you would have somebody to babysit your kids, and like people do that. That's how people travel.
Now,
that's how people used to travel. Who are these fools? Yeah,
I don't know.
All right, sorry. Am I bringing you down?
No, there's some.
There's even a little bit.
There's some bad quotes in here, Jackie, and I think I'll maybe read ahead
is
here a little bit.
Me off? Maybe. You know I'm trying to work on my anger, so this is... Ken! Am I going to have to go upstairs and take an Ativan?
Well, I'm just... Okay, part of my question to you is, like, maybe you can think about this as we're talking. It's like, how does this article get written? Like, they interview these women who are telling these stories, and, like, have these women, like, decided together that they need to approach a newspaper to... To talk about this?
Because like, their husband's whinging is too much.
Like their whinging is the English word. It's an English paper here. But that means like complaining.
Mm.
But they've just had enough and they want to go to the press? I don't understand.
Is that the case?
Well, yeah, I have no... that's what I'm wondering.
An expose was like this overheard on a plane? Like you... I don't know. I guess, you know, what's the sitch?
Yeah. Well, some of this stuff is like, okay, so even when we get off the plane, we're like strangers to each other. Aaron will have a chauffeur waiting for him. The car whisks him straight to meetings. I have to find myself a taxi. At least he does text me to check I'm en route to our hotel. Have they ever sat next to each other on a flight? The only time we've ever flown together in economy was on a flight to Egypt. It just didn't work. I wanted to chat while Aaron was totally preoccupied with his work. He had had to ask me to be quiet. It felt very awkward. It used to be bother me. Did he think his comfort was more important than mine? What did it say about how much he respected me? I've got used to it, though. He's not tight with money. But when there's a choice between a 3,500-pound ticket for business compared with a 600-pound for economy ticket for me to join him, it's difficult to justify it. Do I need the extra leg room? No. I'm only 5'3".
Why is she putting this out there?
That's what I'm wondering. Like, how did this... Who...
Why?
Was
this on a blog? Was this...
No, it's in a...
cut and paste it from somewhere?
No, it's in a regular newspaper. It's the Telegraph from England. I don't know if it's...
article?
Yeah.
Meet the husbands who fly first class while their wives travel in economy.
Oh my god, is it a TV show? It's gonna be. Oh my god, they're gonna be back there like...
Husbands flying in first class.
The real husbands who fly first class.
Wives of economy.
Yeah.
The real housewives of economy.
Yeah, the real housewives.
The real housewives of economy.
With a great idea for a show here.
All right. Copyright that shit.
That's ours.
All right. Get Skybus back on the line. We're bringing him back. Is that the airline we flew? Skybus? Remember?
Yeah, I do. I think that was right.
I miss them.
I remember reading a different article, and I would have looked to link it.
Speaking of flying, though. Skybus. Yeah.
Right.
They were, like, comical. Like, what would they have done in this situation?
They were comical?
Skybus, that airline had a sense of humor, I remember. Just in their, like, advertising and marketing.
I don't know. Like, it's hard to remember that far back.
Yeah, it was, like, $10, you know, for, like, the first few flights. The first 10 flights were, like, $10 each.
Yeah, it turned out that was a little too cheap, I guess, because they were going out of business.
I know. Yeah, all right.
But,
another time.
Yeah.
Okay.
So. But instead of... I was going to say, I was reading a different article about traveling, and it said that there's a trend where couples will travel separately just because they find the process of traveling to be stressful, and then they can kind of both... Not one flying in first class, one flying in coach, but maybe different flights, and then get there at different times. And then they can spend their time on vacation together.
Together or separate?
Together.
Why together if you flew separate? Oh my god, that is ridiculous.
That is crazy. Now, I mean...
How is that economical?
Well, we did at least something like that, only because...
If you got screwed up work schedules, I could see that.
Well, yeah, she went to Austin first, and I met her in Denver, so we had different flights back.
But not intentional.
Well, it was intentional, just in and of the fact that...
They didn't do it accidentally. I mean, they had to pick
it up. It was just because we traveled to different locations first.
Right, that's what I'm saying. But, like, not, hey, we're planning a trip. You
get it out would of my be face different
for the first
for the,
lag.
For
I'll meet up with
part.
You when we're in paradise. I'll get drunk so I can look at your face, and then we'll travel back. So, like, that sounds great.
Well, I mean...
That is a really weird thing. Like,
How long
maybe...
are these people married? Or are these, like, these crazy millennials?
I think they were talking to an older couple who...
what's older? We're old.
Like, I don't know. Gray hair. Age. Yeah. Our age or older. I think they were retired. And, they just found it, they got on each other. It was, like, stressful to travel together because, like...
Yeah.
Like it's a whole day, so it's like, are you having trouble packing? Are you having trouble booking?
Yeah, it sounded like it was all of that stuff.
Are you having trouble like getting an Uber to the airport? Are you having trouble sitting there for 2 hours getting through security? Like,
yeah, it sounded like a lot of that stuff.
You're wondering if it's just one part of the equation and not the whole process altogether. It could be any of those
exhausting.
Things.
Like it, you know, because shit happens, and like, you know, flights get bumped or you're late or whatever. But I don't know.
And then, like, their vacation was to go bike riding together across like Europe or something. But they traveled there.
Then you're
separately.
Like not even talking.
So awesome. You traveled separately to travel together.
I guess so.
It's okay in a bike. But it's not okay on a flight.
If they're biking, they're not talking. So that's perfect.
Why are they not? You can talk when you're biking. Why not?
Yeah, but you don't have to.
Well, when do you have to?
I don't know. You don't have to.
Well, I mean, it would be a little bit harder to communicate when you're biking, I would suppose.
What
like, you'd
have
to
like,
yell because.
You have walkie talkies on, little, like, speakers.
You can stay close together.
Yeah. Pull off for a picnic? I don't know. Do they do that?
Didn't we see... Do you think those guys in the Tour de France were talking to each other? We were watching that last week before the show?
quite possibly.
Yeah. I think they could have talked to each other.
Yeah. But, I mean, still, I don't think they were yapping on for...
That's true. They looked pretty parlay.
They weren't sitting down for a podcast together.
No.
I do have to say that traveling by myself to San Francisco... was kind of fantastic, and having that alone vacation, I really did love that. It kind of, you know, recharged my batteries and made me kind of appreciate what I had back at home too. So,
well, there's that's like a third option, I guess, like separate vacations.
Yeah,
completely.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I did that with Kennedy. I'd love to do that again. Hey, maybe you and I don't know. We passed 10 years. We were supposed to hit the Dominican, but...
Yeah.
I'm still waiting.
So...
That plane's about to show up. Oh, is that why you...
Well, I'm glad we were able to get a... Get the woman's perspective on this this important topic.
This is what happens.
It just all escalates from here.
Oh my god, that's like the second time I've heard that phrase today. That really escalated.
Oh, right.
But I said nicely after a meeting today. Oh. That escalated nicely.
I killed someone with a trident.
Yes, Rick, I've been meaning to talk to you about that. You're going to want to lay low for a while.
Oh, well, Liberty.
Oh.
Do you want to introduce me?
I think he already said your name, so.
Okay. Peace out, world.
Yes.
Peace out, Thank OPA you. Audience.
Thank you,
Stay
Jackie.
Stay tuned. You'll see more of me.
Yep. Always good to get the women's perspective.
All right.
Because what was it going to be? What fancy name did we have for this segment when we initially started this podcast?
Oh, the Ladies' Corner? Was that something that fancy? Does that count as fancy? I'm not sure.
No, I feel like it was... was it the Ladies' Lounge? Like, we wanted to have some alliteration in there.
Hmm. Well, we're going to have to...
get back to you on that?
Yeah, we're going to need to workshop some of this, I think.
Well,
We need a little polish.
We can work our way to a new air-related topic. And one that I've got to admit I was a little unfamiliar with, to be honest with you. I feel like I have seen the name D.B. Cooper or heard the name D.B. Cooper previously.
Yes.
But I feel like I am unaware, or I was unaware, of exactly what he did. Like, it was funny because I even read, you sent an article that was talking about the possibility that some recent documentarist, is that what you call him? Documentary director?
Documentarian.
Documentarian.
I think that's it.
Says that he has found D.B. Cooper, which was an alias. And actually, I found it kind of interesting that D.B. Cooper in and of itself is just incorrect information, because the gentleman in question who pulled a heist back in 1971... It was was it the day before Thanksgiving or the day after Thanksgiving? He purchased a ticket under the name Dan Cooper.
Correct.
So there was some miscommunication between, I believe, the FBI and...
He became forever known as...
D.B. Cooper.
D.B. Cooper. For some reason, they didn't exactly spell it out. Some of the press popularized it. Yeah,
right.
So this was Thanksgiving Eve, 1971. So he bought a one-way ticket on Northwest Orient Airlines from Portland to Seattle. He claimed to have a bomb, secured a $200,000 ransom, and jumped out of the back of the plane and into the annals of American pop culture. This is from the article.
Yeah, that was a much shorter summation, because I even feel like when I went to the... Again, just because I wasn't familiar, I went to the Wikipedia page to fill me in on the whole story.
Right. That's good. You did a little research on this here this week. I like that.
Well, again, like, because I don't feel like one of those shows that I watched that I feel like would have been maybe where I heard of D.B. Cooper. I loved Unsolved Mysteries as a child.
Oh, yeah.
It would be interesting to rewatch those Robert Stack shows just to see...
Was he featured in that show?
I don't know.
Huh.
Because in the Wikipedia article, it mentioned like some pop culture references that he was in, or places that he was in, but it didn't mention Unsolved Mysteries, and I was thinking that it would
For those who don't know, Unsolved Mysteries was a big hit in the 90s of...
I don't even...
they would reenact unsolved crimes that, you know, they were trying to...
Well, and they weren't always people could help. Necessarily crimes, because some of them were like...
They did go a little bit far afield.
There was lost treasure...
That's true.
Alien abduction stories...
Yes, yes. They did go into pseudoscience realms at times.
I love the Lost Treasure.
It was hosted by Robert Stack, who was a like a famous... Well, I don't know. He was an actor for a long time.
87 to 2002.
Oh, wow. Oh. That took the whole 90s and then some.
Wow. I didn't realize it had run for that long, to be completely honest with you.
Yeah, that is a little surprising. Wait, logo as of 2008?
Well, yeah. Dennis Farina hosted from 08 gotcha. To 2010.
Okay.
And then it closed shop again.
Okay. So maybe people are familiar with it a little bit. It's been at least in some form, it's been around recently.
Yeah. So I don't particularly remember... that story being on Unsolved Mysteries. But that would be the only place that I would have really probably heard of them, because I think the singers and songwriters that they had mentioned, I wasn't all that familiar with, honestly.
Right. I don't know if you've picked up, this is another topic that we've covered from time to time, the Twin Peaks connection here to this story. Special Agent Dale Cooper was named because of the D.B. Cooper
case. I did not realize that.
Yes. I'm blanking on that guy's the director's name for some reason. David Lynch. David Lynch said that, so I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, like I said, I was not, I didn't even know that little factoid. It was pretty neat, like, the whole story is pretty interesting, and I don't know if we need to give out a spoiler alert for this.
Oh, well, we kind of sum things up a little bit, I guess, but, yeah.
It was kind of interesting, like, I guess he passed a note to the, to the nearest...
They said he got on board, like, ordered a drink, a bourbon.
Bourbon neat, baby.
I mean, this guy seems like he thought he was in a movie or something, to me. Like,
He was in a suit. He had... and again, like, I just love it because this is definitely an older thing. He had an attaché case. It wasn't a briefcase, no, it was an attaché case, which I quite enjoyed. And the flight was not full, which is kind of hilarious, too. It was only, it was a 30-minute flight.
Right. So, it's not surprising you can order a drink on a 30-minute flight. That is interesting. But, he did, and then handed a note to a stewardess. I guess that's probably what they called him at the time. Flight attendant, we would say today. But, and said that he had a bomb, and he wanted them to get ransom, basically?
He wanted them to get ransom, $200,000 in, and because the wording of that was particularly important too, because some theories made the way he worded the money made people think that he was possibly Canadian, because an American person would not refer to it to money in that manner.
Yes, so this would have been in Washington State, which is near to Canada. So I guess that could leave some.
It's plausible.
Yeah. But I guess this documentary... Well, we should continue the story, I think. Wrap that up, at least. They landed the plane in... Was it Seattle, I think, they were landing in?
Yeah, they were landing in Seattle. They went from Portland to Seattle.
And they ended up bringing... You know, he released hostages... Except for, I think, the flight crew.
Yeah, everyone except for the flight crew and the flight attendant that he had, well, yeah, I think it was the flight crew. Because I think it was both flight attendants that were on it.
Right. And then he...
He locked them in the cockpit, essentially. And then when they were in there, somewhere... somewhere over the Oregon-California border, or was it Oregon-Washington border, he jumped out of the plane.
Right.
Because he had also ordered the $200,000 and four parachutes. Because everyone was assuming he was going to make some of the flight crew jump with him.
Right, because he wanted four parachutes. But he ended up going out himself. Now, from what I understand, the height he jumped from is basically unprecedented for doing... I mean, it would be highly unusual to... Because it was like a passenger jet, right?
It's not like... Yeah, and he had specifically requested, like... He was in there calculating the trajectory with the pilot... to make sure that he was flying... He wanted them to be flying low to start with.
Gotcha.
I think it was that he was trying to keep them off of radar or something. Or I'm assuming he was trying to do something like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, the plane wasn't up at, like, a regular flight altitude for a passenger plane. Like, it... And just all the math that went into figuring out where he should have landed. Yeah. And some of the stuff that's happened afterwards, and it wasn't really... I guess I thought this case was really interesting.
Right. And I guess part of the reason that we're talking about it now is that, you know, beyond this documentary, the FBI has officially closed the case this week.
Well, yeah, and that was the other interesting thing is that this video or this documentary comes out. The FBI is like, nope, we're done. Right. Like, I thought I expected to see some date from some previous time, but I'm like, oh, the Wikipedia page already got updated. Like, it says, like, they closed the case officially in July of 2016. I'm like, damn, son, someone updated this with a quickness.
Well, you know, this is another occasion for props to Wikipedia, because when we were watching UFC 200 and we were watching the final match there, they had that updated within, I would say, 5 minutes or easily.
Yeah, within minutes.
Yes. So, Wikipedia, you're on the job here.
On the ball.
Good work.
So, yeah. So, they're... And the FBI basically said, too, is that if they get concrete evidence, they will open the case back up. But, like, you pretty much need to have, the money at this point.
So I guess that basically means that they don't have to, like, follow up on leads anymore. Is that what I'm basically understanding? When, if somebody's like, hey, I think it's this guy, they can be like, oh, sorry, we're not dealing with that.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like, because that was one of the interesting things about the case itself, is that they found two bundles. Someone was setting up a campsite. along the river that they now think that he landed around or possibly could have landed around. And they found, because he got, what was it, 100 pack, it was 10 packages, because it was all 20s that he got for the $200,000.
Right. So you would think that would be 1,020s. No, that would be $20,000. You would need 10,000 $20 bills. So I'm not sure how much space that takes up.
So at this campsite, when they were digging it, they found two of the packets, and I'm trying to think if it was $2,000 or... Yeah, it was $2,000, I think, per packet.
Okay.
And so they found 4,000, and they were short, like, 10 bills in in a third package.
Hmm.
And they confirmed them to being... in the money that he was given.
Because of the serial numbers.
Because of the serial numbers. Because they gave him specific serial numbers so that they could track them if they ever got spent.
Correct, yes. So that was... I guess they didn't turn up that way either, or at least you'd think they
Well,
would.
And they haven't turned up any more of the money. Mm-hmm. Like... So there's only like $4,000 or $5,900 or something like that that's turned up. And like the rest of the money, like no one's found it in this whole time. I mean, I mean, this is an old case.
I think they said 45 years old at this point.
Yeah, 45 years old.
Now, the documentary that we were talking about as well, I think it's targeting this guy who at one point did claim to be D.B. Cooper, if I heard that
correctly. Yeah, he was, what's his name? He's 72, Robert Rackstraw, which I thought was a fantastic name.
That's pretty good. That's almost as good as Brogan Van Brogan, former CTO of Hyperloop. I don't know if you saw that article earlier. But...
No, I didn't. That is an awesome name, though.
Yes. That might be a separate topic at some point, but yeah.
Our top 10 most awesome names. Everyone will be waiting for it.
So, yes, this guy...
But he was an army paratrooper. Because that was the other interesting thing, is that the guy that pulled this heist off knew a lot about, because this was the only plane that had a staircase that you could open that the cockpit couldn't close.
Oh, interesting.
So, like, this guy was very familiar with, like, the layout of the plane and how everything operated. So that's why they always kind of gravitate to people that have some type of... airline experience, at least.
Yeah.
Whether it's... Because I do feel like they had looked at some people with baggage handlers, but they also feel like a paratrooper would be someone who would, think that they're capable of doing something like this.
And I guess you could always somehow find out this information, but you would have to be good at planning, I guess, to, like, kind of think of these kind of contingencies.
Well, and that was the other thing that was pretty impressive, again, reading the article, that they mentioned that the guy was, like, completely cool the whole time.
Yeah, like, he had some kind of one-liner, too. He said something, like, when he jumped, like, I don't have a problem with your, what was it? I don't have a grudge with your airline, I just have a grudge. And then he jumped.
Right.
I mean, it does seem like he really was into the drama of it all in some way, too.
There was an Air Force base that was near this Seattle airport. So they had actually scrambled two jets, and they had one above and one below, and nobody saw the guy jump. But they did say that it was
a storm, right?
It was a storm.
Yeah.
And that was the other reason why the FBI... The fact that the FBI kept a case open, and they... I guess, originally, what they're still claiming is that from the beginning, they thought he died. Just because the conditions out, and, like you noted, like, it would be an unprecedented jump for, like, because of how low they were to the ground, still.
Right. And I don't think people normally jump out of that kind of plane. I mean, but, I don't know.
Right.
So, yeah, it was, a very daring move. And the money is never turned up, so that makes you think, like, did he, if he did survive, I mean...
He's been smart enough not to spend it.
But then, what did he do it for?
Yeah, like...
This reminds me a little bit of the...
It is just a very fascinating thing. Like, if he is still... Like, even if he's not alive, how did someone not find his body at some... Like, they haven't found the parachute. They haven't found the money. They haven't found a body. Because they found bodies in the area. But they've all, after bone analysis, have turned up to be women.
Oh, okay, yeah. So, like, there's been nothing that has been from him.
Yeah, there's been nothing that would connect him to the... Because they do feel like they've kind of narrowed down the area, even though it's obviously a somewhat still large area.
Right, and it's hard to say exactly when... I mean...
Yeah, they're not sure when exactly he jumped out of the plane.
Winds were blowing around, I'm sure.
Yeah, winds were blowing around, so people aren't completely positive where exactly he jumped, and there's some... Like, there was consideration, then there was reconsideration from another pilot who flew in the area, or like, 10 minutes behind the flight that D.B. Cooper was on. So they kind of compared notes, and they changed trajectories. And, yeah, so they kind of have it narrowed down, and they mentioned it was the largest ever manhunt.
Yeah, and the only unsolved hijacking on American soil.
Yeah.
So,
and the fact that this evidently, this action did lead to a rash of airline hijackings in 1972.
Hmm. I had to look it up because, well, this statistic here says that between May 1961 and January 1973... there were nearly 160 planes that were hijacked in American airspace. So it sounds like during that time, I don't think people, it sounds like they were, it was not like, I don't know. It was like, you know, people were hijacking planes to go to like Cuba, or they demanding to be take this plane to somewhere else. And it seemed like people were weirdly tolerant of it for some reason.
Well, and it was hilarious. One of the reforms, because you mentioned how it went to 1973, I guess, you know, the whole airline industry as a whole started instituting some additional policies. And one of them was to have a lockable door and to have a view window from the cockpit out to the main part of the cabin so that they knew if something was going on.
Yeah, that's a good idea too.
It's always something bad needs to come up for an embarrassingly long amount of time. The fact that this was a decade plus long problem is just like, really? It took you guys this long to solve the problem?
Right, and I just, it is kind of crazy. I mean, because today, I feel like if somebody hijacked this plane, like, there would be no way that they would, like, let them take off again. Do you think so?
Oh, I would not think so.
It just seems like they had a whole different way of dealing with stuff back then. But, it's, maybe post 9/11, I'm not sure. But, definitely things have changed.
Things definitely have.
I was going to say, this reminded me a little bit of that article we did way back when about the so-called, at the time, so-thought founder of Bitcoin, who it actually turned out not to be him. And there was an air of mystery about that person as well. And I just feel like, in the same way that this guy, it'll probably turn out, I would not be surprised if it turned out not to be, if he was not D.B. Cooper, the subject of this documentary. Like, I just think people are weird. Like, you know, people claim to be things that they're not. People, you know, lie about things that they didn't do. They lie about things they did do. It's just, you know, in 45 years from when it happened, like, how in the world can you say what happened back then?
Yeah, like, like I said, I guess that's why it's kind of intriguing. I understand why people are fascinated by it or they want to have an answer.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But, you know, I guess you don't always get an answer. Like, something weird happened. Like, until that money turns up, I mean, that's what it seems to be down to at this point. Like, the money really needs to turn up, or the person that possibly turns themselves in.
Yeah.
Like, you know, those are about the only two ways that this case gets solved now. But the person that turns themselves in, again, like, the FBI would need more information than just some Yahoo going, yep, I'm D.B. Cooper.
Yeah, even at that point, I don't think even at this point, if somebody was like, I'm D.B. Cooper, and they walked into the FBI agent, you know.
Oh, yeah, Bureau FBI office. Field office. Yeah.
I don't think they would take them seriously at this point, so.
Yeah, and I mean, they wouldn't really have much of a reason either. Like, why would you come forward after this time?
Yeah.
Like, if you did get away from this, yeah, why would you admit that? Like, you got one over on the man.
And would you have, I mean, how could you, could he have, like, sent this money overseas or something and gotten paid or laundered it somehow? I don't know. I guess that's possible. But,
yeah, it's just really interesting because, I mean, it was a very, the area that he jumped out of the plane was just in the middle of the woods, which does not surprise me. I mean, that is a beautiful area, but I do understand that it would be, you'd really have to know how to get around that kind of territory to get out of that situation, too. Like, the FBI's assumption that he was dead, it does not strike me as all that far out there, but it's still weird that they haven't found anything. So that's the part that makes you think he's still alive.
I know. You can go back and forth forever,
like,
on it.
Really? Like, you haven't found a parachute. Like, parachutes aren't small.
No.
And if he died, doesn't he end up hitting a tree or it's just laying around?
Oh, it wouldn't be hidden, you would think.
Yeah, it wouldn't be hidden. Like, he couldn't, like, have, you know, packed it up even. So,
it does,
yeah,
make you think he somehow survived the sub-zero temperatures and stormy nights, the darkness. I mean,
yeah, because there were, well, it's kind of like in one that I definitely know that was on Unsolved Mysteries, were the gentleman that did at least escape the island of Alcatraz.
Oh, sure, yeah. I remember that one, too.
But they haven't...
it was a big episode for Unsolved Mysteries.
But they haven't found anything of them either, though, so everyone just believes that they're dead.
Right.
You know, and...
And that's more believable, I think, just because it was at sea, or at least in the bay there. Like,
oh, yeah, and it just sounds like that place is atrocious.
With the currents and everything.
With the currents and that the water is normally cold, like sub-zero, you better be wearing some serious scuba gear to stay warm kind of cold.
Right, yeah. It that one, it does seem safe to more lean towards not surviving. But, yeah, D.B. Cooper, I don't know. It just is like, you want to think he survived, but then again, where was the money? It's a hard one.
Because even if Whitey Bulger can get caught at this point, like, there aren't that many people that continue to get away with it, unless they're dead.
The dead continue to get away with it.
Yeah. Dead men tell no tales, as the pirates might say.
There you go. Not the baseball pirates, though.
Right? No, not the baseball pirates.
Okay, good. Don't want them to be murdering people. That's not good.
Yeah, that would be kind of ugly.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Well, I think there's at least one good talk to be had here, Ken. It's definitely... the week of something interesting here, so maybe I will try to get this post up a little bit earlier than next week.
Ah.
Would be the phenomenon that is known as Pokemon Go.
Right.
I have admitted that the young interns in my office They both started playing Pokemon Go, and they got me to download the game. I at least started. I have not gotten any further than my initial gimme capture.
Hmm. So you haven't actually walked around with it yet and tried to find stuff?
Correct.
Okay.
I have not looked for Pokestops. I have not tried to... I have not looked for a Poke Gym.
Well, there's a couple right down the block, so if you're
there's interested. Some Poke Gyms down the block.
Yes. Down at the synagogue down the street, there's a Poke Gym.
They do seem to like houses of worship for that.
Yes, and the church down the other street. So, yeah, you've got options.
So, yeah, haven't really played it extensively.
I'm amazed at, like, all the little, like, historical markers and things that it knows about. Like, these little, like, plaques that are kind of hidden away that, like, you wouldn't think anybody would have cataloged somewhere.
Oh.
Like,
I didn't know how intense this thing was. I mean, it does seem a bit like a geocaching.
Yes. I think that's a good way to think of it.
Right.
A geocaching game. Because you do have to, you know, walk around to do stuff.
Well, and that was the other funny part. My one intern says that she's going to have to stop playing because she's down to 0.1 megs of data.
Oh. You know, I saw something interesting that the T-Mobile was offering free data for use of Pokemon Go, which is pretty crazy. So that was a nice move. But, yeah, I mean, it's a fun game. I'm not going to lie. And like,
oh, so you've played it a little bit more than I have?
Yeah, and it's like... you know, something I played with my daughter. We go for walks. You know, we went for a walk in the evening and kind of...
and found some Pokemon.
She found some Pokemon, yeah. And she's been really good at catching them. I'm not sure. She can really... has the flick down to...
I have heard that that is a little bit of a problem.
Yeah.
That it's kind of Angry Birds-ish, where you really need to find the right... the right heft to throw things with.
Yeah. So, and apparently you can do like a curveball spin if you like hold it down and spin it around and then throw it. Which I think might come in handy for like more advanced, captures. And what else was I going to say? Oh, yeah. So my daughter picked up 3 Pokemon on the way to camp this morning, and that's like a 5-minute drive, so I don't know how she did that, but she's pretty good at throwing the Pokeball. Just well, in the car, like on the, you know, on the way to camp. That's pretty crazy.
Well, I hope she got to stop at a Pokestop if she was using that many Pokeballs.
Well, and that's the thing, there was like there's like 3 Pokestops on the way in too, because like where she goes, there's like at the entrance, there's one. Like there's, and then you go inside, there's like a plaque by an oak tree that counts as one, and then there's like the main building there that counts as one. Those are all like in the same area. So yeah, it's pretty easy to stock up in the mornings.
Just use your supply during the day and stock back up in the morning.
Yeah, so
sounds perfect.
It all works out. But I might try to go out for a walk. I don't know if I'll do it tonight, but apparently if you go out later at night, you can catch different kinds.
And unfortunately, as there are a myriad of articles about Pokemon Go, there are some people that are using it. Because one of the reasons I was influenced to download it was if there are more Poke Trainers, there's more of a possibility that the Pokemon will show up.
Oh, is that right?
That is what my interns have told me. again, have done very little actual research on this one or Game Time.
Well, that's the interesting thing about this is, like, it's not very well spelled out, like, how everything works. So I think there is kind of like a rumor mill surrounding it. Like, I think
well,
that you can do this.
Yeah, it's hilarious because those two keep on discussing strategy, too. Like, they're trying to figure out best how to attack things. And actually, the one intern, actually, there is a pub crawl this weekend in Columbus. That it's a Pokemon Go pub crawl.
That's pretty brilliant.
So, yes, they're combining drinking and Pokemon Go.
Well, I just think it's really, I mean, this is not an original thought, I suppose, but it's like bringing the gaming into the real world, right? I guess that's kind of like the thing.
Well, and I just found it interesting that it was Nintendo that did this, since they were the ones that came up with the Wii, which seems to have waned in popularity, but certainly was the first game system that made you participate in the game. And this is definitely something that's a step forward from that.
Yeah, and Nintendo partnered with Niantic, I think, which is like an Alphabet company, one of the Google companies to make this game.
Yeah.
So they had previously made a similar, like, geocache sort of game, real world-ish game.
Yeah, and it was kind of funny because, again, one of the interns, she downloaded that game because she doesn't like the fact that there isn't a top-down view in Pokemon Go.
Oh, okay.
But evidently in the companion game there, they have a top-down view and they use the same map.
Oh, okay.
So she's hoping to be able to figure out her locations a little bit better if she compares it to the other map.
Now they just have to make a new game that combines both of those things together.
Or they just need to allow for a top-down view in Pokemon Go. And that would seem to solve that issue, at least.
Well, I did read that they were going to be adding ads at some point. So I think...
No!
Well, it sounds like they're going to try to be a little bit clever about it and have, like, you can have, like, some kind of, like, promotional thing with, like, your store or, like, a physical location.
Oh, yeah. Because that was the one thing is that the one guy at the office wanted us to somehow become a Pokestop. So that, but I'm not sure that an architecture firm is going to have walk-up clientele or children clientele.
Well, yeah. I will say, though, that it is, like, kind of a wide range of a somewhat wide range of people I've seen playing this game. For lunch this week, I went to Highbanks Park, which is down 23 from where I work. And, it was quite busy with, groups of people walking around looking at their phones.
Well, and I guess that's the other thing. Like, I didn't realize that, I guess to incubate some of the eggs or whatever they are.
Right, you got
to
walk around.
You've got to walk around, but you've got to keep the app open or else count.
It kills your battery. Yeah, they need to fix that too, so hopefully they can get that together.
But yeah.
People are willing to put up with it for now because it is so unique, I think. And just some of the stories about, like, people like finding, you know, loaded guns and turning into the police or dead bodies or
some people. I was laughing that the article that you initially linked to was about people being robbed, but it only happened in Missouri. Like, it wasn't happening anywhere else. It's just a bunch of assholes in Missouri. But well, and that's why I was talking about all the trainers being in one place. Evidently they somehow kind of made it a bit of a hot stop for the
Well, you can also use an item like incense, Pokemon incense. If you put that onto a Pokestop, that will attract Pokemon for, like, the next 30 minutes. So, like, people can kind of gather around there and gain from that effect from, you know, if, as long as somebody has used that,
the incense
there, yeah.
Okay.
So I think that's what they were doing.
Gotcha.
In the Missouri incident, yeah. But, there has been positive stories too, like I said, I think there was these two guys were walking around and saw somebody like trying to take advantage of a kid or something, and they like broke it up and kind of were able to like citizens arrest the guy, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Which they, you know, I guess wouldn't have been walking around there if it wasn't for trying to get them all, or trying to catch them all, I should say. Damn it.
That was the only flaw of the show, Ken. Yes. We almost made it through perfectly.
We were doing 1,000 until then. Well. We're going to have to go with the $9.99 on this one.
Just completely wrecked it.
But, I don't know. I think it's... My prediction is that there's going to be some kind of huge backlash to this at some point. There's going to be... But then when I think about it, and like I kind of see the people who are using it, it just seems like there's kind of it has a wide appeal, it seems to me. Where is the backlash going to come from, I guess, is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I don't think there'll be a backlash so much as at some point it will become not popular, many a video game thing. And people move on. And people also are already thinking that, you know, that they can kind of build on from this platform.
Right, yeah.
So it'll probably be something like this, but even more advanced or even more fun or, you know, who knows? I'm sure that you could do a wide range of things that aren't Pokemon. Like, I'm sure you could do just a Dungeons and Dragons type thing. Maybe you could do a James Bond type thing.
I'm listening.
Maybe we can find ghosts and do some ghost busting.
Oh, that would be awesome. Well, you know, I think we need to go check that out at the theaters. Maybe do a Sunday morning this weekend.
Unfortunately, a Sunday morning this weekend is not in the cards.
Mm.
As I must travel on Sunday.
All right. Well, we're a little bump on the road there.
Yeah, we have traveled to the end of this show, Ken.
Oh, and what a journey it's been, Kevin.
Time has flown.
Yes. Or we have no way of knowing.
We had the ladies' corner or whatever that was supposed to be named.
Yeah.
We talked a lot about DB Cooper and as usual we can end on the Belltime beer of the week.
Ding ding ding.
And this week, provided from Great Lakes, it is Chill Wave Double IPA. Usually not a fan of double IPAs. There's some funk that comes with, I would say, at least 75% of double IPAs that makes me not a fan. Chill Wave does not have that. It is in the 25% group.
Yeah, it's like a real, I don't know, bright tasting or something, I would say. Like, it's not, like you say, it doesn't really have, like, a funkiness to it.
It almost seems like a regular IPA, relatively speaking.
Yes, but it does pack a little bit of a wallop, I can attest to.
I do believe, and I forgot to look, I do know that it is 90 IBUs, so it is quite bitter.
Yeah.
And it is well above and beyond in the percentage department. Yeah. For alcohol levels. I'm trying to look it up here real quick.
I just finished my beverage, and it feels like maybe I had more than one beer.
9%.
Yeah, there you go.
So, yeah, it does the trick.
Yeah, well, if you're in the mood for that sort of thing, I believe
it... Oh, and I misread. It's 80 IBUs. It's still pretty hoppy, though.
Right. It does come... in a 4-pack, which I don't know. I always feel a little bummed out when I buy a 4-pack because it's like, you're missing out on two beers. You're like, Can I get those two beers, please?
Well, this goes back to maybe something that I feel like I mentioned, but I certainly understand the brewer's dilemma. You have the malt is the most expensive thing, and to make a 9% beer, you have got to use a lot of malt. So I can understand limiting the number, or you've either got to limit the number or up the price. Four pack is a way to try to balance that out, in my opinion.
Should be a similar price to a regular six pack.
Yeah.
I hear what you're saying.
So, yeah, I
get
it. So
I guess you do pay for that, the extra alcohol percentage there.
Yeah, and honestly, if you golf four of those, I'm sure you'd be doing pretty good.
Oh, wow, yeah. You're ready to catch some Pokemon at that point, for sure.
Oh, man. So, for myself, at DeFrango 11, for at Gozer 33, for the brand, at Stunt Granny, everybody... don't catch too many Pokemon.
Yeah, and watch out for dragons.